Good afternoon, Muskegon.
Good afternoon.
This is Tony Williams.
And Chauncey Williams.
And we're here to help you understand the finances of today. My name, again, is Tony Williams. I have an insurance agency located in Muskegon, Michigan, downtown, 752 Pine Street. I do all kinds of insurance as well as financial investing. I've been a licensed broker for the last 25 years. And this is an opportunity to share some of my knowledge with the citizens of Muskegon County.
I'm Chauncey Williams, educator, and also author of the book What Do I Do Now? .biz, and I work as an affiliate for United States Student Loan Debt and also for Lexington Law Credit Restoration Services. I've been doing it since 2003. I had my own complications with credit and debt, so I felt like If I can get through my storm, I can help people get through theirs.
And that's the purpose of this show, is to have some dialogue concerning the things that we've experienced in life from a financial standpoint, as well as from a debt and credit standpoint. We like to share some of that knowledge with the people of Muskegon County. So what I'd like to do at this point is give Chauncey a chance to give you some background about how he got to where he is today.
I'm here today, like Tony mentioned, he had 25 years of experience. Mine is not exactly in that background, but this is the whole purpose of the show, and the show being titled, What Do I Do Now? Your Guide to Credit Debt and Planning for Financial Success is spiritually connected to me, and I look at it as being a way to help people. Almost 10 years ago, I was in a situation where my credit was upside down. I had a terrible situation I came into. I lost my job, I lost a car, I lost some real estate properties I owned, and I found myself in turmoil and in tragedy. And by being connected with the services that I'm connected with today, I was able to regroup my life. It took me about 5 years to get everything back in structure, but it took people like Tony Williams, mentors I've had, and also the services I work with today to help me get my student loan debt under control and my credit to build my finances again. And today we're going to just be coming with strategies that you can do to help yourself build your credit. And just looking back at my background, I just know people are out there that needs free information, that they know that you're not the only one, you're not alone, and you need that help to build your skills back in finances.
And a lot of times individuals need that emotional significant event in their lives to make them stop and think, you know, what am I doing? What can I expect out of my life for the next 20 to 30 years? If I keep doing what I'm doing now, it's pretty much guaranteed it'll be a failure. Because if you don't have the finances in shape, you'll never get to financial freedom. And by that I mean, if you wake up one morning and you realize that you are flat broke, What will you do now? Okay, to me, that's a significant emotional event to be broke. So you tell yourself, well, I will start today doing things differently in my life, which means that I will look at life differently. I will manage my money differently. I will take opportunities that will allow me to make money and to invest it and to manage it and to become debt-free and have financial freedom.
And like you said, that I just want to just piggyback on what you said is and looking at it, like hitting rock bottom was a good thing for me, because a lot of times you find people robbing Peter to pay Paul. They do those things like that, and then they find themselves that's trying to save themselves in a boat that's way from shore with no oars to row. And now they're stuck. And looking back at the time when I was in that situation, I say, what do I need to build my life again? And I remember you talking to you earlier, and you were saying that building a financial plan, like having a financial plan to get yourself back in line. I remember doing that, having workbooks, having my accountant sit with me and show me how I can restructure my life and build things. But it took a lot of getting away from a fixed mindset. See, a lot of times people have fixed mindsets that the same decisions they made in the past, they can make today, and it's gonna benefit them. And that's hurting a lot of people in our economy today.
Well, that's a guaranteed plan for failure. It's just no different than life itself. If you do the same things you did 25, 30 years ago, then you haven't learned much about life. Okay, you gotta be a better person spiritually, financially, than you were 25, 30 years ago. And I think the major question that people have is, where do I start? How do I begin this journey? And I look at it like taking a vacation. Rarely do people just get in their car and take off and go on vacation. I'm pretty sure there's probably a small percentage. But most of us, we develop a plan. Okay, we determine if we're going to stay at a hotel, at a relative. We're going to determine what mode of transportation we're going to take. We're going to determine how much money we need, how long we're going to stay, what are the things we're going to do. Setting a budget is pretty similar to that. You have to start deciding what you want to do, okay? And again, like I said, it's like taking a trip. So first of all, you got to decide, can you afford to take the trip? How far can you go? How long can you stay? So not to belabor the point that you have to take that first step, setting a budget, and we'll get into that a little bit more as we move through the program.
Like going back to that emotional thing, like Tony, I think about like my situation. I just go back. I mean, sometimes you have pride. You'll sit there and you'll be stuck and you're like, man, I don't know what to do. I don't want to know if I want anybody to know that I'm in this situation or I've been in that situation or it happened to me. And when it happened to me, it was detrimental because one day you have something and the next day it's gone. And you're like, where do I start? Because if your network doesn't have it and the people you're around have, where are the resources? What direction do I go in?
Asking for help, basically. Asking for help. And, you know, it's the same thing as in substance abuse. You know, when do people ask for help? Which is no different than in a financial crisis. Where do I go? Who do I talk to? And like you say, being prideful, a lot of folks don't want to take that first step. But again, if you don't do it, you are going to suffer the same consequences that you've suffered for the entire life. So again, it's important that we as especially African Americans take the position that we're going to do things differently in our life. And you can always look at statistics. Statistics can tell you, you know, what the past has been like for people. And I was reading today, and there was one particular statistic that kind of make me stop and think about the number of Americans that don't have a bank account.
What's that number?
When you think about banking in America, okay, it's really hard to see how people can get through life without having a bank. When you look at debit cards, on how you pay your mortgages, your bills, but it's like 7.7% of Americans, which is roughly about 10 million, don't even have a banking account, don't understand the concept of banking.
So they still functioning with the money up under the mattress.
Right. Right.
And cashing their check and having the whole thing on them.
Right. And God forbid a catastrophe takes place where, you know, there's a fire or you're robbed and you're not able to recover that money because it's unrecorded. Okay. And again, like you said earlier about building the credit back up. Okay. It's virtually impossible not to do it if you're not involved with some kind of a financial institution, be it a credit union or a bank.
Yes.
But I think you're going to speak to that as we move through the program. But I just thought that was an interesting statistic that there are still a large percentage of Americans, in my opinion, that don't have a bank account or a savings account.
What drives me is like when I can look back, like the way I look at education is like, it's like education is not taught on financial literacy. I mean, financial literacy is not taught in schools unless it's a curriculum or if you take an economics, a civics class, or it's prescribed when you get to college, marketing, you know, business. But the actual way to plan your financial success is not set up. I mean, I can even think back to going to college, graduating. When I graduated, my credit report was terrible because they offer free credit cards on campus, get you a free T-shirt, get you a free pizza. And if your family does not have financial education and you take those credit cards, you find yourself in a terrible situation when you graduate. And the way the economy is set up now, they pull credit reports when you apply for jobs.
Absolutely. And what else? Tell me, what else does credit has to do with your financial strength?
Your financial strength, it affects when you apply for a job. It can change. Like I brought in some 25 tips from my book I wrote, and I had tips I was going to give away called, and it's on my website, whatdoido now.biz. And one of them says, just talking about the negative information on your credit report when you apply for a loan, for a car. How can that affect your interest rate? I have one of my pointers I just wanted to share with the audience today. And it talks about, is good credit important to have? And that was the question, one of the 25 tips I have. It says most of the life-changing events that take place in life, such as marriage, having children, going to college, buying a home or a car, are all important aspects of life. Most of these decisions require having financial stability or having the necessary resources to borrow money if needed. In order to receive the best possible options, one must present a good credit portfolio that presents responsible credit history. It's like, it's saying that if I don't get to see you as a person, this is what you look like on paper and how you would deal with the money that I'm getting ready for you to borrow. And that's a serious situation that not people are not dealing with it in the right way. And they want a quick fix. I mean, I get people that call me all the time and say, all right, help me with my credit. And I was like, well, it's going to take at least a year, at least a year to get you out of a situation that you probably built up over 5, 6, 10 years.
Yeah.
And then when you tell them the financial commitment that they have to make, like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, well, you're going to find yourself still wandering in the wilderness of being in bad credit and having bad debt. It's a serious issue.
And spending more for certain services and products than folks that's got good credit, okay? Prime example is in my industry, in insurance. For the last 4 years, most companies have went to a credit-based scoring system to determine the risk of insurance for individuals. And if you have bad credit, statistically, it has proven that you are more likely to file frivolous claims.
Okay. I remember coming in your office and meeting you, and I was asking you, I said, what's the highest claim you had? And I just want you to repeat that for our audience. And I was, I mean, I couldn't believe it, audience. I mean, it was like this person had to have bad credit. I'm looking at one of my pointers here. It talks about can student loans or things can hurt your credit report. But like having a low credit score can affect your insurance. I just want you to reiterate that situation, and I know you're not gonna, you know, we don't disclose names.
No names.
Let's go over the situation when, and the quote you had to provide with someone that had bad credit.
Okay, yeah, it was rather shocking to me as when I developed it, but in the state of Michigan, if an individual walks into your office as an insurance agent and asks for a quote, you must provide them with a quote. So I take all the pertinent information and enter it into the database. And then the platform is what we call it, based on algorithms. It kicks you out a number based on the history that the system was able to determine by the individual that gave you their information. And this came out to be like $25,000 for 6 months for full coverage on an automobile. And it was like, wait a minute, this can't be right. I must do this again. Came out the same way. Moral of the story is, insurance companies can offer you a quote, but the state never said it had to be a good one. But it's all based on that credit, claims, that whole bit will determine the kind of premium you'll be offered by an insurance company.
Yeah, I have a pointer on that too. And the question I had posed was, I had a client, and these are questions that I have from people. It says, why am I being charged higher interest rates when applying for a home or a car loan or insurance? And my response was, low interest rates can be given to individuals with higher credit scores because of their past credit history. That history that we have, the higher the credit score, the lower the interest on the loan will be. If you show a lack in credit responsibility based on your score, banks are more likely to offer, or insurance agencies or companies offer, a higher interest rate. Lenders take into consideration other factors when determining interest rates. And something else I want to bring up to our audience, going to the hospital, if you need a serious surgery, they make you fill out a credit file for that.
We'll find out if they can get paid.
That's it. I mean, it's serious, and I want our audience from 103.7 to Beat just to know that we're on here trying to build the knowledge and let them know that they can be helped, they can rebuild their financial future. Because the worst thing for me when I thought back where I was at is just looking up my situation on paper, mm-hmm. and seeing a number like seeing a credit score of a 500, a 520, a 530, and saying, is there any hope for me? And somebody tell you, like, oh, you got to wait 5 years, 7 years, or 6 years. You don't have to if you're equipped with the right information.
Right.
You can get your credit cleaned up and restore it in about 1 year. So a lot of times people look at it and say, it's over. I'm just going to deal with cash. You brought that up earlier, and they're only going to deal with cash. I only buy things cash. Well, you're going to get everything secondhand.
Okay.
When it comes to getting a vehicle, when it comes to getting a home, you're going to get everything. You have to wait on secondhand things because you got to use credit at times to build your financial future. You got to have that to get into the door.
Unless you're independently wealthy, and most of those folks still use credit. I think there's a statistic about how many times a millionaire goes bankrupt. I don't know what the exact number is, but it's multiple times. So at some point in time in their lives, they had to get their credit cleaned up as well, even though they're millionaires. And, it's just a risk that these people are willing to take in order to be millionaires. But we're talking to folks that get up every day and go to work and try to maintain a certain standard of living and not feel like they got to work from paycheck to paycheck. And that was one of the things that I was going to expound on, is the fact that you need to have that budget, a household budget, which talks about expenses and income. Because once you can develop a roadmap of understanding of what you have as income and how you use the discretion of your income to take care of your expenses, you have a clear indication as to what can I do now to affect the future based on me investing my money. But until that first step takes place, you're going to haphazardly walk through life spending money and never understanding where it's going and what the benefit of having discretionary income can do for you when you're trying to build financial freedom.
Yep. I've read literature and reading literature in the past, and when that word is thrown out, that B word, it's like a bad word, like budget. You're like, ooh, you said budget to me. It's like you someone cursed at you. Like,
right.
Why do you say that word to me?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do, control me? Mm-hmm. So a lot of times people look at it like, you really trying to limit what I can do with myself.
Right.
But it's actually giving someone freedom for the future.
Freedom for the future.
Because, I think about things going through our community, Muskegon Heights, and the listeners that we have. Let's think about insurance policies. Now, I was thinking about since I met you, thinking, what does it take to start a simple insurance policy? What's the difference between, say if I got my budget set up, everything is set up, I have some discretionary funds set aside for that, and I'm ready to start a policy if I just had a kid, or I have a child that's 15, or even myself. Where do I start with the kid? With just having a baby, how affordable is insurance, and how much could a person get if they're in good health?
Well, I think you made a very good point, Chauncey. When we're talking about life insurance in particular, and you purchase it when your child is extremely young, they will always be able to be insured for the rest of their lives. You can spend $15 a month on a $50,000 whole life policy on a newborn, which at some point in time will have a cash value to it.
So you're basically telling me that every month, if I pay $15 a month, no matter the age of the child after they're born, I just pay $15, and then at a certain age, that insurance will mature to $50,000?
Yeah, it'll be a cash value in the insurance policy, which you can actually take the money, which reduces the face value if there is a claim, or you can borrow it, or you can use it to make payments in the future on that policy. But that is the time when you want to purchase it, is when they're 3 days old. It's a universal life policy. You can have a fixed component to it that says, okay, I don't really want to dabble in the securities market, the stock market. I want a fixed income of 3%, 5% every year based on what I contribute into this life insurance policy. The other side to it is, unfortunately, we have young children that have been diagnosed with diabetes, hypertension, other kinds of
health issues
that at some point in their lives they will become uninsurable, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if they're 3 years old, they haven't really developed any kind of health issues, then they're guaranteed insurability for the rest of their lives, regardless of what illnesses that they might come to at some point. And the other unfortunate part of it is, I get a lot of people that come when they're in their late 60s, maybe early 70s, looking for life insurance. And just pure numbers will tell you, if you wait that long, you're going to pay a whole lot more. Okay? So I'm glad you brought that point up. And I really think that people that do have young children should consider life insurance policies outside of work. Because a lot of times people come and say, oh, yep, I got insurance at work.
It might be like $40,000, something
right,
like that.
Right, but they're not portable. In other words, if you were to leave that employer, you have to leave those benefits behind. Versus having your own personal policy, regardless of what you do in life, that belongs to you and not the company. And then there's nothing to say that at some point in time they can take those benefits off the table. Okay? So now you're stuck with trying to get life insurance later in life. Yeah, for your family.
Because your family is covered under your life insurance. So if you move jobs, you don't have that no more.
The portability is gone. Hopefully the next employer offers that same type of benefit, but there's no guarantee. I mean, just like defined pensions. Years ago, our parents worked at the various factories around town, and yes, they all retired with a defined pension. It says if you work X amount of years, we're going to contribute X amount of dollars per month to your retirement plan. Now, companies are getting away from a defined benefit, and they're offering you a 401k plan with some kind of a match, 5%, 6%, and that's going to be your retirement.
And that's not a lot.
Okay, unless you contribute it, you're contributing on a regular basis at least 10%. So in other words, if they're matching 5%, you're contributing 10, then that 5%, if you put in $100 and the company's giving you $100 in that investment vehicle, okay? The downfall to that is most people that are invested in 401s through their employer don't really understand the market and how they should be invested. So they go in, you get hired, they say, okay, here, sign these papers, get signed up for a 401. They may have a rep there that day, maybe not. And they say, okay, invest in these products. 10 years down the road, you're still there and you're still investing in the same products. Well, there could be other ones that came on the market.
Nobody has called you in a year on your anniversary.
Right.
If they're not, if you're the person that helped you invest, if they're not calling you yearly and telling you
no. To
change over, and you can increase, you can do $18,000 out of it. If you can, if you started another business, you got a way to maximize that, and they're not even telling you, you just got money
you're just sitting there.
Cause it's probably growing at the rate of inflation.
Right.
That's not good at all.
Possibly be that way. And that's a service that I do offer in my office, is to do a review of 401ks with individuals. They cannot take that money unless there's a separation event. So as long as they're employed there, that money has to be there. So you may as well maximize the earning potential that's been given to you by understanding where your money should be invested, okay? And then there's some cases people have been employed and they quit and they walk away, and their 401s are still sitting at the old employer, okay? And I've also helped people access that money and put them into an IRA, which is an individual retirement plan. So those are some of the things that we plan to talk about later on as we move forward with our programming. So we don't want to get too over the top.
Yeah, and I know that, and I just want to make sure that the audience can know that if you want to reach us, I have a Facebook page, Credit and Debt Help. You can send messages there. Tony Williams has a Facebook page. Find him on Facebook. I'm on Facebook, Chauncey Williams by myself. Website, whatdoidonow.biz. Connect with us. Share your issues. A lot of times people, it's not a call-in type of thing. We're here Saturdays at 3 o'clock. It's not a call-in type of thing. So if you want to reach out to us, because I really want to help people. And I was thinking about my next topic I had on here. It says, how do I become a productive citizen with valuable credit? And that leads into investments and life insurances. And I just want to just share that with the audience. It says, understanding you are responsible for life choices you have made, but also be willing to make changes in order to improve your life. Small changes are recognized and acknowledged. However, the consistency is what brings about lifestyle changes. Other adjustments can include knowing and understanding your credit, saving money for the future, like you just mentioned, and only borrowing money when needed.
Okay.
You know, a lot of times people borrow money to get new furniture. I mean, that's a waste. Furniture is a waste. I mean, you can get secondhand stove furniture. I'm not into that.
Depreciating asset.
Yeah, depreciate.
Automobiles are depreciating assets that we pour a lot of money into. When basically automobiles were the concept was for transportation to get from point A to point B, and it should be in line to your income. Okay, you shouldn't be driving a Mercedes-Benz and you're working 8 hours a day at a minimum wage job. That just doesn't add up. You know, that's one of the sayings that one of my associates had before is driving a Range Rover and having a landlord. You know, that shouldn't be that way. You should be a homeowner driving a Chevrolet.
And trying to match those things together. You're exactly right. But it's just things that when people see them, they see levels of success and they think that's success, like clothing, vehicles, jewelry. I've lived that in the past, and that's a hurting experience when you look at those things and then those things don't materialize into true investments. When you can look at a bank account, or you can look at some of your investment portfolio and say, I got these things that I've saved up and now they're working for me and helping me and my household. So, like, you're exactly right, just looking at it and seeing that. But going back to what you said, establishing a budget is the first thing. That's the first thing I did. I sat down, I had a workbook, I built things up, I looked at my monthly budget and said, I can afford to put this here, I can afford to put that there. And going rock bottom was the best thing for me to do because it helped me restructure my life. A lot of times people look at storms and say, it's a bad thing, but you don't want that storm to happen again. Structure your life in the right way so you can say, okay, now I'm here. Now let's do something about my credit. Let me get my credit restored. Chauncey said he could help me in a year. We can put that place in a year. Okay, student loan debt. Get that handled. Now you're freed up. If your student loan debt was $500, now it's $200. You got $300 in surplus. Now you can get a life insurance. Now you can get an investment. Now your credit is better. Your car insurance is going to be cheaper. Your home insurance is going to be cheaper. Now you're moving towards financial freedom.
Exactly.
And you're looking at things. You're eating the loan up now. You can eat the loan up on your vehicle. You won't be paying so much in interest because now you're able to knock the principal down. So people need to understand that. Oh, I got approved. Praise the Lord. I got approved for a loan or this or that. But look at read the terms, because interest collects every single day. Look at it. It's annual. It's APR. It's every single day. Whatever that amount is, it's being taxed every day.
Yep.
And when the market closes, because they set up the market to make money off of us. And we have to be able to say, how can we use it to strategize? Tony being here, sharing his wisdom about insurance. And those things, those can help. I know you talked about whole life, and then you had term. You mentioned a situation to me of somebody is too old. What they can deal with term? Like you said, they can save some in their bank account, and then they can do something else. Could you elaborate on that?
Well, yes. Some simple concept is called investing, buying term, and investing the difference. When you look at the cost of a whole life policy, especially for a middle aged person, say in their early 20s, mid 20s, it costs a lot more to have a whole life policy than it does for a term policy. So my concept is to buy the term policy, take the difference, and invest it into an IRA or a brokerage account, Roth IRA, somewhere where you know that this money is going to grow, okay? It's going to grow through appreciation, market performance, but yet you're still covered any event something were to happen. Because you have the term life policy, and it's more of an illustration. You know, if people don't understand insurance, life insurance, it's kind of hard for them to wrap their arms around
it. A lot of times, like, people look at it, I can even share it with you, people will look at it and say, well, I don't actually have the money in my hand right now. It's like they look at it like, oh, you're telling me if I pay you this, I'm gonna have this. It's like they don't see the fruits of their labor paying for them later.
Right.
You know, they don't see that. It doesn't material. Like, I can't hold it in my hand right now.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see the long-term effects of having something good like that.
And that's the journey. I mean, the journey is to be prepared for retirement, okay? Let's hope that we're all blessed with good health and sound mind and sound body, and we can get to that point. And when you get there, you want to be able to enjoy the fruits of your labor, okay? And I think that's the whole concept behind what we're talking about here, is taking today and preparing for the future. We're going to close here shortly, but I have a story that I'd like to share with our audience.
Go ahead, brother.
And this was right on the cusp of the Michael Jordan Nike era. And all the kids wanted Nike shoes, the Air Jordans, whatever. son came to me and said, Dad, I got to have a pair of those Nikes. And, you know, my son knows how I am. Okay? Yes. And I looked at him and I said, looks like, you know, you got on a pair of nice sneakers. And they don't have holes in them. They're clean. I think those are, you know, functional shoes. I said, but what we will do is I have a brokerage account. We will buy some Nike stock.
Wow.
Okay.
I was just going
to
say that.
25 years ago.
Man.
So this is what I want you to envision, son. When you're sitting at home and you're watching TV and they're showing the shopping centers where people are standing in line, lined up to buy those Nike shoes at $100 a
you
pop.
You're making money off of them.
You kick back and say, I like that, Dad. I'm making money. And I think that has stuck with him to this day.
Wow. That's a golden nugget right there. You just gave our whole community.
Yeah. Don't be a consumer.
I go places and I see every time the new Jordans come out, somebody got some. And then when I look at the stock market, I'm like, it's only $100 to buy a share. Like if you buy so many, you'll have so many lined up. If you got 30 pairs of Jordans and they cost them $200-something and a share costs $100, why not?
It wasn't that much when I bought it.
Yeah, I know.
It was like $15 a share,
so now
man.
They're like $100, $109. Which I mean,
they split. The stock has split multiple times, okay? And then you think about what does it cost Nike to make that shoe? Probably $10.
$5 last time I checked. Cost $5.
$5, okay.
$5.
All right, we was going to give them the benefit of the doubt.
So they market up 1,000%.
1,000%, man.
And make all the money off of it through the marketing. They pay their marketing. But they offer people jobs in the situation.
Oh, no doubt.
But the people that's buying them.
Let's look at that demographic.
That's it. That's the demographic that's killing us because it's a lack of insurance.
Yeah.
Lack of health care.
Yeah.
You know, education. So it's like it's hurting so many areas of our community. And it's not an investment. It's not something like, look at this. Look what I've invested in. No, it's going to get old. It's going to tear up.
The only way it's an investment is if you don't wear them. Okay,
right,
if you got a pair of the original Nikes, Jordans that came out when they first came on the market, now they're worth money. What are the percentage of people that did that? Probably 1%, maybe. And if it was, they could afford to let them sit on the shelf. They bought them as an investment.
That's great. This is our show today. I'm Chauncey Williams.
Tony Williams.
And this is the show, What Do I Do Now.biz, your guide to credit, debt, and planning for financial success. And we come on 3 o'clock every Saturday on 103.7 The Beat. If you want to reach us, check us out on Facebook, Tony Williams, Chauncey Williams, Credit and Debt Help on Facebook. What do I do now? Biz, B-I-Z. Reach out to us. You could be somebody that's going to be on the show and record, or you could be somebody that we can answer some of your questions. You can inbox us, and any questions you have, we'll keep your name anonymous. Once again, it's Chauncey Williams and
Tony Williams, and we thank you for listening to 103.7 The Beat.